Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lilydale Radio, featuring topics about spiritualism, mediumship, healing, spirituality, and the Lilydale Assembly, the world's largest center for the religion, philosophy, and science of spiritualism. This is Lilydale Radio.
Thank you for your patience. We will have the show momentarily. Again, thank you for your patience. The show will start momentarily. Merry Christmas, everyone. Welcome to the 2021 Christmas episode of Wednesdays with Willa. I am your host, Willa White, and this is a weekly podcast show that airs on Wednesday mornings at 10 a.m. Eastern on my Facebook page, Willa White Medium. I encourage you to view past shows. You can look at the archive videos of past shows. I've had great guests on my podcast. We usually have a topic relating to spiritualism, mediumship, healing, faith, family, or more. And today, I will be focusing on an aspect of this Christmas holiday and how we can apply certain spiritual and mental and metaphysical understandings to this particular holiday season. So also, you can view this on my YouTube channel. You can like and share and follow and subscribe and get all of the notifications as to when I go live for these kinds of events, when I post premieres of different shows with various guests. My guests are usually either mediums or authors or healers or those that have an understanding from all walks of life, all kinds of different topics. And a lot of folks tell me that they binge watch my show, that they watch a series of them, and they really are gaining a lot of spiritual understanding and education through my show. So thank you so much for tuning in every week or when you can. Love having you with your positive comments and the support that you've shown the show over the past 4 years. We're now in year 5. And you can look back at the Christmas shows I've done in the past. Last year, we talked about the Christmas star. We've talked about A Christmas Carol and its elements of spiritualism and spiritual understanding that show up in that particular book or movie, as you prefer. And also the Christmas carols and how they relate to spiritualism as well. Lots of great things. But today, on this particular show, I'd like to focus on a different aspect of looking at Christmas. There is an element of the light and the dark that is very prominent right now, and we can see that in evidence in our lives. But especially, we have the symbolism that yesterday brought us. Yesterday being the winter solstice. So December 21st is the winter solstice, and then we have Christmas on Christmas Eve on the 24th, Christmas Day 25th, and there's a reason I feel that all of this has been grouped together, and I'm going to get into that over the course of the show. And I did title this Handling Holiday Hullabub. Hullabaloo, I should say, Handling Holiday Hullabaloo, because alliteration is fun. But we're going to go a little bit deeper than usual with some of these topics. So the solstice, we've just experienced the longest night. And the solstice word is derived from Latin, which means sun and to stand still. So because of the solstices, the sun appears to stand still. And it's a seasonal movement of the sun's daily path. A lot of you are familiar with that, I understand. But it's that time where things kind of pause and reverse direction. And so there's this great pause that happens during either the southern or winter solstice. And it is celebrated throughout the world. And I do feel Christmas, to some extent, is an offshoot of the solstice. It's more widespread as a contemporary holiday, although there are additional elements to it as well. But the idea of the great pause is something of great interest to me and hopefully to you. That idea that when we move into winter, we are accepting that there's a bit of the hibernation that comes along with it, that going within, seeking the light within that we don't always see around us when the days are gray, perhaps dreary. And at least in my part of the world, in this region, we get a lot of snow, cold, and definitely more of the gray skies when it's one of those beautiful winter blue skies and the sun is beaming down upon my face. I feel gratitude fill my whole being. But until those moments, I feel like we're stepping through those shadows and into the sunlight until we reach that light that we see externally and also internally. So we have this concept of the great pause. And it's a reminder to us all that when we're in the hurry-scurry and the hullabaloo, in the hoi polloi of shopping and everything that comes with these festivities, that we do take those moments to pause. So I know you've probably heard from so many people, take a moment to meditate, to pray. There's a reason for that, to just have that pause collect us so that we can move forward with greater power, with greater grace that we give ourselves and other people in those times. So in terms of the winter solstice, in ancient China, they thought of the winter solstice as the apex of yin. So you've probably heard of yin and yang. The symbol has like two fishes, and we've got the white and the black, and the yin represents the darkness, the cold, and the stillness. So on a winter's day, when it's not blowing, there's this kind of stillness all around, and you can hear with greater ability that crunch of the snow under your boots. And you can almost hear a little bit farther than usual because of the snow. So we have this cold and stillness, and the solstice last night, we had that longest, this longest night. It's also representing the longest day in many ways, that feeling of that slow ascendance of into light and warmth again. And that is the return of yang. Now, some cultures view the solstice as a time of death and rebirth and refer to the solstice as the light of winter. So isn't it interesting that we've just experienced the longest night, which is of darkness, and yet what do we also refer to the solstice as? The light of winter. So we have this dichotomy, this dualism that's present. And many cultures also refer to the solstice as extreme of winter. So I want you to keep those phrases very much at the forefront of your mind as we go forward in this show today, the light of winter and the extreme of winter. Because the solstice and therefore Christmas are an acknowledgement of and a celebration of the extreme. And it takes me back to Genesis when God said, let there be light, and there was light. And God saw light and that it was good. And then God, what did God do? God divided the light from the darkness. And so morning had its first day. And there was a division of the heavens and the waters, the morning, the evening, the earth, the sea, man, woman, all of that. And that dualism is a way that the universe was created and constructed, and it exists. And when I look at dualism, it actually helps me so much in knowing that I don't have to take everything so personally, that when there are opposing viewpoints or forces that come into my environment, that it's an opportunity for me to have awareness, to recognize it for the dualism that it is, and to set the intention to see the divine light within myself and the divine light within others. And it does seem that there's this practice and repeat that occurs with this process infinitely. But the more we recognize it, the easier it is for us to surf the wave that goes on during those times. Now, in terms of the winter solstice, again with that light, that season of light, and you know, we have the festival of lights, we have that recognition of it coming to us in that way, that we have this opportunity to recognize the light more fully. So the light is a metaphor for knowledge and for consciousness, and so it's not surprising that many view this time as a spiritual victory of light over darkness, of good over evil, and of knowledge over ignorance. And it's in this process of overcoming, this process of practice and repeat, that we go inward and we find that divine light within, that beautiful comfort in times of grief, in times of difficulty, and in times of worry. And we are reminded with each passing day, with each passing week or year, that this too shall pass. So I'd like to segue into an understanding more of color when we think about light and how we perceive light and also how we perceive color. What are the main colors of Christmas that are represented? Well, I'm wearing them today, right? We've got our red and we've got our green. And every year we decorate our houses in red and green at the Christmas time, and that red and green are not the only colors associated with the holidays. We do have white and gold and blue. Those also are on that list. And if you do any kind of research about Christmas and the colors associated with this, you'll know that they have religious and historical origins. But I thought it would be neat to talk about Christmas colors in a different way. You'll have to let me know if this is new information for you, things I'm about to cover. So, of course, most people understand that the color green is considered the color of life, the color of mystery. Even before Jesus Christ was born, that was something that was in evidence. You know, people worshipped the evergreen, the understanding of the holly bush. They saw it as a magical, mystical thing that these trees could survive harsh weather, really harsh elements. I mean, here in Lilydale, we've had extreme weather. We've had the polar vortex that's come through in different years, and we certainly get the snow and the cold, and it's something that we understand we have to embrace those moments of harshness and rely on that strength within. And I feel that that green very much represents that. It's so associated with life. So that evergreen kind of equates to eternal life, right? This idea of eternal life that's springing up from that which may look dead. If you look at the other trees, they look dead, they look bare, they look, you know, that idea of the seasons of life that we go through and the difficulties and the duress. So we also then have the red, and that red symbolizes for some people blood or love, depending on who you ask. When we talk about colors and what the colors people see in auras or the colors that people wear that affect their mood, red is very much a power color. It's very eye-catching, and it's something that can symbolize that resurrection of light within us. That root chakra, root family survival issues are very much engaged during this time of Christmas, especially as you're relating to family, as you're maybe making decisions about whether you are going to spend Christmas together or spend Christmas apart, and some of the dynamics that occasionally families experience, that idea of how do I connect and relate with my tribe or with my family, with my people. And so we have also Santa. Santa, what does he wear? He wears red and white, but that red is very invigorating, and it's something that it was associated with the robes of bishops. You know, St. Nicholas first wore that in Santa's uniform. So that we have that idea of the red symbolizing love, prevailing in every relationship, and working toward loving people unconditionally. Now, how does that relate to something a little bit different that you might want to know about color? I'd like to share with you an idea that is called Herring Theory of Color Vision. So we have something called opponent processing, and we're going to be focusing on that through parts of this particular show. But in terms of how we perceive color, Herring came up with this understanding, well, I shouldn't say came up with, but it was that idea of presented that there was this opponent process theory of color vision. And it's a theory that helps us develop our current understanding of sight. So the theory suggests that our ability to perceive color is controlled by three receptor complexes with opposing actions. So examples of this would be the red and green complex. Oh, look what I'm wearing, red and green. These are considered opposing colors. Blue and yellow are considered opposing colors. And black and white, back to that yin and yang. So red and green create their own yin and yang, shall we say. And that color red, remember, is a positive. It can be an exciting response in the cell, and while green creates more of a negative or inhibitory response. And when the cell is activated, it tells our brain that we're seeing red. Meanwhile, there's an opponent cell that gets a positive response to green wavelengths of light and an inhibitory response to red. So in other words, there are these two types of cells in a red-green receptor complex that can't be activated at the same time. And this explains why so many times you might see an after image. So if you close your eyes, you can see an after image because the red and the green are opposing, or black and white are opposing, or blue and yellow are opposing. So we have these understandings, especially after you've been staring at an image for an extended period of time, you may see that brief after image in the complementary colors after looking away. So if you're understanding me, let me know in the comments about this. But in terms of this opponent process theory, it does go into another realm as well. So in the 1970s, Richard Solomon, a psychologist, came to the conclusion that when one emotion is experienced, the other is suppressed in opponent process theory. So we have, again, that understanding that with red, when we see red, the green is suppressed. When we see green, the red is suppressed. And it can also be that way with emotional extremes. And this other is expressed, it really is part of this opponent process theory. So let's say you have this example of a person who is afraid of the dark. And whenever they find themselves in the dark, that individual will express fear. While the relief is suppressed, and if that person continues to be exposed to the dark, after a while, the fear decreases considerably while the relief intensifies. I would say this is in most people. This is definitely not an experiment that should be done with children. but this idea of how we move through it to some extent. And as we're exposed to the dark, after a while, the fear decreases considerably. You kind of get used to it, and the relief intensifies. But if the stimulus is no longer present, let's say you turn the light on, or it's finally day, that first emotion disappears, and it's totally replaced by the second emotion. So that's just a basic way to understand, this opponent process theory. So this theory is actually using the herring color vision theory, right? The opponent processing theory of color vision. And he extrapolates that into the emotional and motivational states. So examples of pairs of opposites in emotions would be fear, relief. Another one would be pleasure, pain. Another one would be sleepiness and excitement. And as a fourth example, we have depression and we have contentment. So these are opposing oppositional pairs having to do with emotions. So with the Solomon's opponent process theory, we are basically triggering one emotion by suppressing the opposing emotion. Now this is going to play into how we look at Christmas too, right? Because let's say we receive an award, and the moment we're handed this award, this certificate, we feel a lot of joy or pleasure or this trophy or the Oscar. However, maybe an hour after getting the award, you feel a bit sad. The secondary reaction is often deeper and sometimes longer lasting than the initial reaction, and then it gradually disappears. So I just want to help you visualize this a little bit better if you're having trouble understanding it from the standpoint of that opponent processing theory. So let's imagine there's a graph here, my hands, right? And we have happy here, we have sad here. And we experience that happiness of receiving the award. And then what happens is a little bit while later we go back down and kind of feel a bit sad. And then we kind of gradually build up until we're at that normal line, whatever normal would be. But it's that idea of the variance of the happy and the sad. So there's this roller coaster that occurs. And it's something that triggers within people. So in terms of that secondary reaction, we notice that it's a way of looking at how things are triggered, especially in terms of fear, relief, pleasure, pain, that when one is experienced, it triggers an opposing emotion after a period of time, and that with repeated stimulation, this opposing emotion sometimes become stronger and actually weaken the experience of the primary emotion, and it provides an after effect. So it's kind of an interesting thing. Can you think of times that you have felt that way yourself, that you've noticed that you've had that, well, that was so good, and now I'm down? And it's this theory that helps explain how our emotions are very much activated. And let's go a little bit differently. Let's talk about people who jump out of planes and parachute. I have never been interested in doing that myself. Maybe you have, but let's talk about those military parachuters, right? So let's say these men are jumping out of the aircraft for the very first time, and they're absolutely terrified. I would be. I would be the person who wouldn't get on the plane, first of all, but definitely the one clinging, not wanting to jump out. So you have all those physical symptoms of fear. And so you have this intense fear. Let's, again, with that idea of the graph, we're down here to start with because of this. All of those symptoms of fear that are expressing in us. And then upon landing, there's this rush of relief, right? And all of a sudden we're climbing into the happy territory. And, you know, the adrenaline has been engaged, of course, but it's like this high. And then it kind of tapers down again to the, let's say, the normal line. So we have this rush of relief, and after repeated exposures to that experience, the fear occurs in shorter and shorter durations. So I'm not as afraid as I was last time, and then eventually their fear is like this little blip on the radar, maybe, and they just go for the arc of the happiness. But there's that relief that's evolved into pleasure. And that turns the parachuting from a scary activity into a very exciting one. And that's something that some of you can relate to when you've been afraid and then you get into the sweetness of something when it really wasn't as bad as you thought. But I'd like to give you another example, especially as it relates to Christmas. All of you have either witnessed this or done this yourself. At some point, you have either as a small child or maybe even as an adult, seen this go on within yourself or others. Let's say there's a small child becomes very irritable after and crying on Christmas, and it's usually when? A few hours after opening presents. So you have this excitement, this build to Christmas. I'm going to open my presents. Oh my goodness, it's so exciting. And then the presents are open, and some kids are expressing boredom. They're crying, they're coming down off of that excitement. Now, the psychologist, Richard Solomon, he thought of this as the nervous system trying to return to a normal equilibrium. And that after we have that, he actually referred to it as the after feeling, right? That after the initial emotion wanes, we have that secondary reaction that intensifies, that after feeling occurs. And so that's what you may need to be thinking of in terms of Christmas this year within yourself or with others, that there's this build-up for Christmas. We go shopping. There's the excitement of planning and wanting to give and wondering what you're going to receive and all of these extreme emotions that are associated with this particular holiday season as we're rushing toward the end of the year, the end of 2021, and wanting to get over the hump into a new, fresh year, 2022, and to escape that which we may not have liked in this particular year, wanting to make something better. So there's this culmination of events that happens with the solstice time and with Christmas. And it can be a bit addictive, too, because even after Christmas, what do they have? They make sure they have after Christmas sales. You know why? It's because people have gone down, and they want that hit again. They want that happiness again that comes from purchasing, buying, having another gift, having another gloat. And so there's that dualism that is very much present. And as yin and yang are swimming around, right, we have that black force with the white dot representing yin, with the white force with the black dot representing yang. And I really think that comes to a head here during Christmas time. This ancient Chinese philosophy, who knew? But it describes how we have these opposite or contrary forces that can be complementary, that actually can be interconnected and interdependent in our natural world, and how they give it rise to each other as they interrelate with each other. So another way to look at this yin and yang principle is that all things, all forms of change and difference, such as this annual cycle that we have with winter and summer, and that we have with north and south and east and west, and even with male, female, that all of those kind of social, political characters and history that have been through the world, that it's part of this disorder and order that is going on with all of us. And that's why we have the way of the Tao, which is the middle road. We try to find the middle road between all of these extreme contrary forces of the yin and yang. So I wanted to ask you guys a question, not just with Christmas, although that's what we're in the thick of right now, but in the course of this year, who has experienced a lot of stress? Raise your hand. Yeah, me too. You know, it's interesting how we look at stress. And I was actually, I wanted to tell you a story. I was in a medical center a few weeks ago. And it was one of those, when I say medical center, I mean one of those places that have all these different doctors and all, you know, physical therapists. And, you know, all it's a building that has all of those people contained in it. And I was walking back to the exam room, and I noticed something in the hallway, all these stacks of boxes. And I I thought, well, gosh, this is, it's very interesting what is written on these file folder boxes, you know, the white ones that are cardboard that you can write what the contents of the box on the outside, and there were stacks of them in the hallway. And I get back to the exam room, and I say to him, I say to the doctor, hey, did you notice those boxes in the hallway? He said, yeah, I really should make them move, get them out of the hallway. It's embarrassing that people have to see all these boxes. I said, oh, no, that doesn't bother me at all. Did you happen to notice what was written on the front of those boxes? He said, yeah. And I said, well, I find it very interesting because what was written on those file folder boxes? Stress, January 2021. Stress, February 2021. Stress, March 2021. It's as if all of these, the stress was contained in boxes per month. And I just thought it was so, what an interesting idea that we could just, you know, go ahead and put our stress in a box. Now, of course, there's stress tests that people have had, but what if we could just go ahead and put our stress in a box and know that it was going to be recycled, give it to the angels? Is that idea of, you people are always talking about how they want to get rid of stress. It's a huge moneymaker out there, this idea that we're going to help you get rid of stress. And this is as simple as this and that and the other, and you need to eat right and exercise. And, you know, there's so many ingredients to handling stress, and that, you know, stress is a killer and all of these kinds of things. And there are elements of that that are very correct, but I wanted to give you a different outlook on the stress that you may be experiencing from this past year or years, or that you've been experiencing during this holiday time, because as much as this holiday can bring a lot of joy, it can also bring a lot of stress and a lot of duress. And so when I ask who's experienced a lot of stress, I'm sure some of you have definitely been there. But there was a study that tracked 30,000 adults in the United States, and they did this over the course of 8 years, and they started by asking people, so, how much stress have you experienced in the last year? If you want, you can put it in the comments how much stress you've had in this last year. And so they would answer that question. And they also asked them, do you believe that stress is harmful for your health? So do you? Do you believe that stress is harmful to your health, for your health? And what they then did is they tracked those people over the course of 8 years, and they even used public death records to find out who died to verify those things. And what they noticed is that the people who experienced a lot of stress in the previous year, they had a 43% increased risk of dying. That's pretty incredible. So it's interesting that that happened, but here's the caveat. That was only true for the people who believed that stress was harmful to their health. The people who experienced a lot of stress but did not view stress as harmful were no more likely to die. In fact, they had the lowest risk of dying of anyone in the study, including people who had relatively less stress. So it's very interesting that it's not about the stress, it's the attitude about the stress. the way we think about the extremes of our life, the way we look at the dualism that's presented and the opposing viewpoints and the opposing forces that we feel in our life. Because if you were to track these things and understand that sometimes it's not necessarily the stress that is hurting us, it's sometimes more the belief that stress is bad for us, that we can't handle it, that somehow, as an empath, I get it. I feel my things, I feel other people's things, and I can feel the stress and the emotion sometimes that people have been going through. But what if we could change how we think about stress, and that would actually make you healthier? Because there's a scientific study that says, yes, we can change our mind about stress. We can change how our body responds to stress. So I guess a good way to explain this a little bit more regarding stress is, let's imagine that we're all in some big social stress test. And some of you are like, I've been thinking I am. So just for a little bit, about 5 minutes, we're going to take a little social stress test together, okay? And we come into this laboratory. Maybe it's the physical life you're in right now, but let's just say this hypothetical laboratory that we're all in, this particular episode of the show. And, you know, let's say I told you you had to give a 5-minute impromptu speech on your personal weaknesses to a panel of expert evaluators that are in front of you. And to make you feel pressure, they're going to shine bright lights into your face and on your form and make sure that there's a camera in your face, and that while you're doing this, they're going to give you discouraging feedback, some of it nonverbal feedback like this. You know, what if they do this? And by the time you are demoralized, they're going to throw a math test at you. And they're going to throw this math test at you, and they are going to, they've been trained to harass you while you do it. And so let's just pretend you've done this, you've already been rattled, it's already been, you know, shaken in your boots, difficult and frustrating, and now you're expected to do a math test. So let's pretend that you have to count backwards from 998. In increments of 7. And you're going to do this out loud and as fast as you can. So play with me. Start at 996. Work your way back at, you know, increments of 7. Now go. Go faster. Go faster, please. You're going too slow. Oh, stop. Stop. One of you made a mistake, so we're going to have to start all over again. So there's this element of feeling like, oh, I'm not very good at this. And you can really feel the stress kind of coming in just in that little frame of having somebody expect you to have the correct answer and that you didn't go fast enough, you're too slow, all kinds of picking into you on your mistakes, your so-called sins of the moment, that in the grand scheme of things, knowing how to do that math thing is not necessarily very important to your life, but you wanted to do well with it, right? And you get the idea of how this can be extrapolated into other parts of your life, because even if you were to actually do this study, you would probably be stressed out. Maybe your heart would be pounding. You might be breathing faster. You might be breaking into a sweat. And I, you know, when I was thinking about this, it actually helped me recall back in college, I took a public speaking class. And I had to do my presentation. And I got up there, I had my cards all ready. I'd been practicing. I had researched and everything. And there I was, and my knees were knocking. There wasn't a podium to stand behind. No, I had to get up in front of everybody. They could see my whole body. They could see how I was nervous as all get out, shaking like a leaf. And it was so bad that the teacher said, "Willa, it's okay if you want to sit down. It's all right if you want to stop now, because we can see that this is really causing you." I mean, he probably thought I was going to keel over because I felt like I was. And, you know, fast forward some years later, and I found a level of confidence in terms of public speaking. Obviously, it's what I do a lot of now, right, guys? But it's funny when I think back on those, the anxiety I felt, the absolute terror that I had, and I was really, really trying to face my fear. I was trying to do what I was supposed to for the grade, and also because that was the point of the class. And I actually can see how that happens in mediumship too, because when you, let's say you're getting ready to do public mediumship in front of a group of people, a lot of times there's this energy that starts to surge within me. And I started realizing that when I would keep interpreting my physical changes as anxiety and that I wasn't coping well with pressure, that I actually led myself into a failure mode. But, and this in science backs me up on this one, that if you view the signs of your body doing those things, the heart pounding, breaking into sweat, or just maybe starting to stir in that way, a little bit of that anxiety is actually about your body becoming energized. It's preparing to meet the challenge. And that's actually what they found in a study they did at Harvard University, that before they went into that social stress test, they were taught to rethink that their stress response was helpful, that that pounding heart was actually preparing them for action, and that if you were breathing faster, that's no problem. It was you were getting more oxygen to your brain. And a lot of participants were able to understand that the stress response was actually helpful for their performance, that the less that so they were ultimately less stressed out, less anxious, they were more confident, and it's really amazing how their physical stress response changed, because in that typical stress response, the heart rate goes up, the blood vessels maybe constrict, and then with chronic stress, that can be associated with cardiovascular disease. And it's not really healthy to be in that state all the time. But in the study, when the participants were able to understand and view their stress response as helpful, their blood vessels actually stayed relaxed. So maybe their heart was still pounding, but there was a much healthier cardiovascular profile. And it actually looked a lot more like what happens in moments of joy and moments of courage. So you can see how there would be a biological difference in how we handle stress on our bodies and on our mental capacity and how we relate emotionally to the events. And so I noticed that when I would do mediumship, there's a stirring that happens in my abdomen. And I could have interpreted that as, oh no, I'm getting anxious, I can't do this, I'm going to fail. Or I could understand that it is the energetics preparing me for success, to help my body cohesively meet this challenge, to help my emotions regulate so that I can do the best in terms of mediumship that I possibly can. So it's very fascinating. I hope that this is helping you guys to understand where how you can switch over into how you view, how you handle your stress. And I'm starting to understand that it's not about getting rid of stress, because stress is always going to happen. There's always going to be something that happens, an opposing force, right? It's part of the dualism, and we can walk as much as we can that middle road, but it's about being better at stress. And, you know, if you raised your hand and, you know, when I asked that question, mentally or physically raised your hand, that you had a lot of stress in the last year, that is something that I hope you can revisit in terms of the stress, that how you reframe that stress response that you have, maybe the way you view the stress that happened, what you want your body to believe about you and stress, so that your stress response becomes much healthier as you go through this holiday, as you're going into the Christmas celebrations and festivities even more, and how you want to reset this for the years ahead. So I'm really glad that I was able to start this conversation with you of how we revisit stress, especially during this hullabaloo, as we're handling how we relate with stress. And I wanted to also share that when we have these discomforts, that we're actually chasing meaning. If we can chase the meaning in what is going on around us, then trying to avoid discomfort, we actually are able to reset our body systems, our emotional systems, our energetic systems. So that's what I've been trying to do over the years. When I notice that I'm kind of hitting into a space, I say, okay, what is it that I need? Because it's not just about, oh, I've got a stressful job and I need to let go of a stressful job and choose a non-stressful job. That can be what people need to do. But sometimes it's about how we handle that stressful job. So it's wise to go for a stressful job as long as you believe you can handle it in some sense, right? And when I say job, it's not just about a career job, but sometimes it's the job of taking on caregiving for another person. Maybe one of your parents has been ill, or your spouse, or a child, or, you know, those caregiving moments, because those become jobs. As much as you don't want to always think in terms of them, and it's not about resenting them for what they're going through, it's more of that it can be a lot of work. So if we can reframe how we handle those stresses, or how we handle other people's perceived judgments of us, then we don't necessarily work to avoid that discomfort, that we chase the meaning in why that is happening. And it actually helps us to trust ourselves to handle the stress that follows after that. It's really one of the better ways to make decisions. So it's a way of also forgiving things in the moment. So I did want to share with you kind of a summary of a checklist of these comments and concepts that I've shared with you today to help you handle this holiday or any holiday that comes your way. But this one certainly is a holiday of extremes. So I would just, in summary, say to recognize dualism for what it is. That means being aware of the extremes and how many times after things go up, they go down. And after they go down, they go up. And you just have to kind of wait for those moments and be aware of the roller coaster ride of Christmas and show compassion wherever you can. You know, these moments that we observe about ourselves and others, and to have a spiritual patience and really offer grace to people who are going through difficulty at these times. Look at it as an opportunity to care for others, either at a distance or close up. And if you know something that you can really help them with regarding their physical, emotional needs level, that you can help as long as it doesn't hinder, and that you ultimately seek to trust in their journey. Because we do have our own stress, but then there are people, myself included in the past, still in recovery, as it were, stressing about people that we care about. It's easy to fall into that, but what if they don't do this? And how can I help them do that? And we have to back up from wanting to think for another person, feel for another person, be for another person, and recognize that as much as there's that tug of war that is ever present in these circumstances, that sometimes we have to let go of the rope. Sometimes we have to let go of our expectancies about these things. And through our own actions, teach other people how to deal appropriately with their stress, with the extremes. Not by pointing out, going, I see that you're experiencing an extreme, and this is what you need to do about it. People don't usually respond well to that, as you know, but it's a way of kind of introducing lightly a conversation with people so that there is another way to look at stress and ultimately build resiliency, because that's what seems to help most people be able to truly cope. It's that idea of, if you watched last week's show with my father, when he said struggling to live, there's that one gentleman that he would talk to regularly who was always struggling to live. If we're in that mindset, it can make all of this much more difficult. This Christmas time difficult, our life difficult. But if we could look at each other and maybe just laugh as we say, I'm struggling to live, then there's a humor, there's a way of coping with the stress of that moment that actually takes it out of the downward trajectory back up into the happiness space because of the humor. And I do feel that that helps with building resiliency. And not everyone's going to be up and happy and cheerful at all times, especially during Christmas. A lot of people are missing their loved ones, whether they've passed or they're not able to spend physical time with them at this point. And to recognize that that's okay. But there will be an upswing. Know there's an upswing. And above all, don't take it personally. And practice the great pause. Oh, yes, I'm glad I put that in the summary. Practice this great pause. You know, the solstice is a time of remembrance of the great pause. We are so brilliantly constructed in our bodies and in our universe, if we were only to look at it that way. There's this solstice that has this great pause before things change again. And we have this moment to just maybe take a deep breath. Let's do that now. And do a few more deep breaths if you like. And we are in the great pause together. And after every two thoughts, there is a pause. There's a silence within our bodies that we can enter into in our minds, in our emotions, and with our spirit. And that will also help us handle the extremes of the season, the extremes of life, if we practice that great pause. And that helps you to recognize that your life is giving you an opportunity to be in that state of rebirth, that within your own thought systems and energetic patterns, we have the ability to have rebirth. Just as a Christmas story, right, of Mary and Joseph, this idea of the symbolic man and symbolic woman producing Jesus, this understanding of divine joy, divine light. We have that in the paradox, the dualism, that even through opposing forces, something can be born that is of the light. Something can be born that is a physical representation of that or an energetic representation of that, whether it be in a marriage or maybe it's in a project that you're doing, that you're coordinating with other people or within yourself, because we do have that dualism within ourselves. But it's that understanding of the energetic patterns that are repeating and practicing around us, and that we can observe them with spiritual discernment. But most of all, during this time of the year, in terms of handling the holiday hullabaloo, understand that you do have the ability to see in the darkness. You do, at all times, have that ability to experience the light. That there will always be an up if there is a down. Well, I'm going to leave that with you and wish you all that ability to see that light in the darkness, to open your hearts and your minds to the highest and to the best, and to embrace every opportunity of a renewed life. Thank you so much for your kind attention today, and next week I have as my guest Ron Skaronski, and we have a great topic to follow this one for sure. The topic is how to trust in your life. Isn't that a perfect topic? I can't wait to talk with Ron about those things next week here on Wednesdays with Willa at 10 a.m. Eastern next Wednesday. And I have a great lineup for January for you of guests and topics as well. So thank you, everyone. Have a beautiful, warm, loving, peaceful Christmas. And know that you carry that light within you at all times. You be well. God bless. Bye-bye.